I really love Marvel.
Comic Conversations.
It's awesome.
With your host,
the wickedly talented
Tony.
You go back and you get her busy bee. Go to the hotel and get busy bee.
And Alex.
Fascinating. I think they call that a clean kill.
Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, everybody. This is Tony, and you're listening to Comic Conversations, the podcast that reviews more comics than anybody else. And as always, I'm joined by my co-host, Alex. Alex, how are you doing today?
I'm doing good. My drop was about fucking Warcraft expansions coming out.
Ooh, nice.
Tomorrow, and Heroic Memoron is the single greatest raid boss fight they've ever done.
Nice. Do you want to give out your... How does World of Warcraft work? Do you get a handle or something, or a clan?
Oh, I don't really... I quit the game when my... when everybody in my guild wanted to stop playing.
Mm-hmm.
A bunch of them are playing again on another server, and I joined them, but I have like a level 5 paladin, and I'm just there socially, and I don't even know what they're called.
Okay.
There you go. So, shout out to Mal'Ganis and Kill Jaden servers.
There you go. All right. Let's go straight into news. A relatively light week for all things news. The first story being Nighthawk has apparently been canceled.
I was fucking pissed when you told me that.
Yeah.
Because the book's been good, but, you know, it's like a hardcore version of Sam Wilson Captain America, which doesn't sell. I think the issue here is most comic fans are white, and they're not comfortable with this.
Really? You think that's it? It's, to me, it's just Nighthawk, and he's so far on low on the totem pole. It's like, who cares? Like, yeah, we know the Hyperion Times is being canceled. So I think it's more so about the name value.
No, in all honesty, Squadron Supreme isn't over because they didn't push them properly. So none of the character solo books are over. They did this weird thing where, like, normally you would do a team book. And then if the team book is popular, you do spinoffs. They did a team book, which they really did nothing with, and it wasn't popular.
Mm-hmm.
And then they still did spinoffs. So, yeah, this book is good, but nobody bought it because they don't care about the team he comes from. Therefore, they don't care about the character. It sucks, but, you know.
I like the way you described it off her. It's basically they're doing the same storyline they're doing in the Steve Wilson book, but it's done a lot better.
Sam Wilson.
What did I say?
Yeah, because they're both doing, like, well, it's not really racist cops in this, but they're doing racist cops in this, except in this, it's actually cops, whereas in the Sam Wilson book, it's, like, robot cops.
Well, they don't want to go over the line, so they're just playing it up and make it kind of a normal superhero story.
But in this, they have no problem going over the line.
Yeah,
and I like it more. But, you know, whatever, pussies.
I do find it odd that the of the two African American books, the one written by the white man is doing better.
Yeah, but it's not really doing good.
And it's also based off the popularity of the character. Sam Wilson's been around forever, and it's still technically a Captain America book, so.
But it's not selling well.
Yeah.
So even it's not popular, but due to the fact it's Sam Wilson and he's in movies, his book gets to continue. For now, at least.
Look, I'm trying to create a narrative that comic book fans are racist, okay? And I'm doing a poor job of it.
I don't think they know that. You know, the race of the writers. Although we did, I should point out, we had a funny thing before this where Tony brought that up. And he's like, is the guy who writes this white?
Oh, don't go there, dude.
Oh, no? We went to Google.
No, I had to do a Google image search because I'm like, I think he is, but I've seen pictures of him and I'm not entirely sure.
I confirmed he is a black man.
Okay. Because I'm so colorblind. I can't tell.
Yeah, you just couldn't tell. But I found him in African garb, so.
So, I can find a picture of One Man Gang in African garb.
Well, yeah, but he's clearly white. Right. And his name is Akeem the African Dream, sir.
I'll remind you to say so. Although, I think he's gone back since because he doesn't own that title and he wrestles at WWE.
Oh, he's One Man Gang?
Yeah, he owns One Man Gang, but he doesn't own Akeem.
Team up with Vader and squash Will Ospreay and the Young Bucks.
There you go. Teach those young boys. All right, let's move on to our next story. The teasing of a mystery title called MU by Steve McNiven and Cullen Bunn.
Yeah, we don't know anything about this.
They're teasing it as MU, and then people are speculating that it may be referring to, let's see if I can look this up. It may be referring to a, what is it right here, Marvel content called Mu, which was featured in the 1940s with Namor, and more recently with Agents of Atlas.
Well, it's not MU, it's technically Mu, because there's no periods.
Ah, there you go.
Alright. So, yeah.
And really, this is our next news story, which is, you know, it's a tidbit story, but it looks like they may be bringing Bruce Banner Hulk in Uncanny Avengers 16, because they show a giant jacked up dude in green wrapped up in bandages.
I call bullshit storyline thing, because as I told you, they are not bringing Hulk back, who was the big death in their big summer crossover, in the secondary Avengers
that
title. If Hulk comes back, it's going to get a mini series.
Here's the thing. I'm looking at this and I can't imagine who it could be. The one I'm thinking right now off the top of my head, if it's not Hulk, would it be Abomination? Abomination's been dead.
Or time travel, or alternate dimension, or a clone, or a robot.
You still there, Danny Alex? Avengers. Okay. Sorry, you cut it there for a second.
It ain't Hulk.
Okay. I'll let that go. Just because they're teasing that they're bringing somebody back from the dead. It's going to be the Hand in this Uncanny Avengers 16 title. Okay, that's going to do it. This week's news. Let's go into this week's comics. I was telling you, I knew about the Goonies game before I knew about the Goonies movie.
That's so weird.
I was like, oh, they made a game. They made a movie about that one game on the SNES.
I wonder if Jack's old enough for that.
What's that movie rated? PG? PG-13?
Well,
if he's not old enough to comprehend it.
I think it's PG, but PG back in the 80s is like PG-13 now. Mm. I don't think there's a lot of like bad language and nobody gets brutally murdered.
The problem with that is, how much would he care, A?
Yeah. Well, it's kid, when he sees fucking, what was his name, Data?
Uh-huh.
The Vietnamese kid. $50 bill. That kid's got all kinds of gadgets. He'll be all over that.
Yeah. It's also old. And you're also talking about a kid sitting down a kid and expecting to watch a 2-hour movie.
This is my wish, and I'm taking it back.
Nice.
How many people have gotten drunk and jumped into fountains and said that? I bet a lot.
I bet you did.
I have, yeah. Marty Jannetty did it.
Did he? Is that true?
Yeah, there's a picture of him WrestleMania weekend. He's at a hotel. He jumped in the fountain.
Nice.
He's probably trying to get his wish back. People said he was on drugs, but.
He was worried about this struggling guy that he was tagged up with, Shawn Michaels. He's like, oh, just please make him a star. It's like, I feel bad for the kid. I mean, I know Vince has the plans on putting the belt on me, but do something with Sean, please.
He was wishing. He's like, please fix Sean's fucking lazy eye.
Didn't he get that eye later? I thought he didn't get it.
Yeah, he didn't always have it. But this was recent. This was at Mania.
No. Oh, like, okay. I think you meant Mania's past, because he's been an active competitor on Mania. Oh.
He also said he fucked Sonny.
Ooh, good for him.
No, when she was a gross cow.
Oh, that's sad.
Yeah.
All right, let's go into this week's books, which include Archie 11, Action Comics 962, Blue Beetle Rebirth 1, Deathstroke 1, Flash 5, Hal Jordan, the Green Lanterns, Core 3, Hellblazers 1, Six Pack and Dog Welder, Hard Traveling Heroes 1, Titans 2, Wonder Woman 5, Clean Room 11, Lucifer 9, Captain America, Steve Rogers 4, Extraordinary X-Men 13, Nighthawk 4, Faith 2, Generation 0, Issue 1, and Rise 16.
Let's go.
All right, let's go into our first book, Archie, from Archie Comics.
Yo, so my wife didn't make fun of me this week, but she really should have.
Did you say that Archie should belong with Veronica or Betty?
No, after I read it, I went out to talk to her about it, and she just kind of nodded her head and was like, God, you're such a fucking 16-year-old girl.
if you weren't a breadwinner, I'd totally leave you.
Well, what happened in this one, Archie and Veronica started a band, and they were going to be Archie and the something, but she said they had to be the Ronnies. And hearing them all play, which Betty heard, she had to get a band together. Because that used to be their thing, and she was angry. So.
It's funny that they had the gimmick to where Veronica couldn't sing very well, but when she looked at Archie, she could.
Yeah, she could only sing when she looked at Archie.
So like, oh, we're going to have to do a setup when we finally do the Battle of the Bands at the talent show.
Yeah, that was foreshadowing. Yeah, but so they go to their Battle of the Bands, and after they both play, and they were the only two acts anyone gave a shit about, because they're still split, because Veronica got that teacher fired. So half of the school thinks she's a hero, and the other half who liked him thinks she's evil.
Mm-hmm.
So the school was split, and Archie goes outside, and then Betty goes outside, and they kind of make up, like, they miss being friends, and they hugged. But when they hugged, Veronica saw it. They didn't hear what they said, but Veronica saw it. And what's the other dude, Saeed?
I think that's the guy that Betty's seeing. I don't know his name, though.
I think it's Saeed.
Okay.
And he saw him hug, and they both looked like, "Err." So there's trouble brewing.
Yep.
This is a good issue.
Yes. And the creative on that book is writer Mark Waid, art by Veronica Fish. Another solid entry in the Archie Wade run. All right, let's leave Archie and go into DC Comics with Action Comics 962, writer Dan Jurgens, art by Stefan Segova.
God, they finally ended the...
six parts!
The Doomsday story. Well, yeah, but it came every 2 weeks.
I know, but still, it felt like... between this and the other book with him fighting Eradicator, it's like, dude, can we have a normal Superman book where it's just not all punching?
Well, Superman does punch a lot.
That's true.
But what happened in this is he got Doomsday up to his Fortress of Solitude because he had to build something, and we didn't know what it was unless you've read Superman comics in the last 30 fucking years, and then you knew exactly what he was doing.
Yeah, exactly.
But he couldn't slow Doomsday down long enough to build it. So Lois, who was watching all this on video cameras, told Wonder Woman, like, hey, you gotta go save him. Because Wonder Woman was standing there watching this, like, she just wanted to fight. She didn't understand why she's on the fucking watchtower guarding them.
Mm-hmm.
And they're like, come on, you gotta go save him. And she's like, no, because I'm supposed to protect you. And she's like, we're on the fucking moon. We'll be fine. Go help him. So Wonder Woman comes down, starts beating the shit out of Doomsday, which gives Superman enough time to build a Phantom Zone generator. And he traps Doomsday in the Phantom Zone. For people who read the last issue, you might remember that Mr. Oz sent his people to capture Doomsday for him because he wanted Doomsday.
Mm-hmm.
Doomsday killed all of his soldiers with ease. And he was like, oh, that was unexpected. But in the end, we found out that he intercepted Doomsday being sent to the Phantom Zone, and he now has Doomsday. And in a very supervillain way, he's like, Doomsday is now mine. Meanwhile, Superman went to go talk to Luther. And he told him he's not 100% with him. Like, he's not fully convinced he's good.
Yeah.
But, you know, Luther said, oh, well, so we're allies now. And Superman flies off. He's like, no, not yet.
It's funny because you get kind of the impression that Luther feels the same way about this Superman as well.
Well, because when Superman was talking, when Luther was talking, he gave the Luther speech because, like, he asked him, like, why do you have a Superman logo? And he basically said, I wanted to show the people that a human could protect them. And, you know, Luther's old deal was he hated Superman because Superman was the one who always saved the world, but he wasn't a human. And because he wasn't a human, he, number one, shouldn't be better than people. And number two, the people shouldn't look up to him because they should look up to one of their own. It was a jealousy thing. And he still kind of has that, but this Luther seems to have it more in check. So while he thinks the same way, he hasn't yet gone about it the same way. Like, he hasn't become evil and decided he needs to kill Superman.
And can I say, while reading this, why didn't he do this in the original continuity first fought Doomsday? Like, this seems like such a no-brainer. Just sending them to the Phantom Zone.
He never thought to get him out of the city. he just never thought to get him out of the city, so he ended up fighting him in the city, and he died.
This read like a message board's answer to the death of Superman. He's like, oh, why didn't you just take him away from the city? Oh, why didn't you just take him to the fam zone? Oh, he didn't have to die.
He's wiser now.
I know, but it's one of these things to where, should I fight this guy to the death, or should I try some other ways to dispatch this evil
possibly
villain?
It was a dig at the Man of Steel movie.
The part where he escapes the city, that part I can legit say.
Yeah, like, he got him out of the city, no one had to die. You know, I don't think it was that. I think it was just, you know, he was trying to show that he's learned since his first fight with Doomsday. But, you know.
Shame it took him.
This is how Superman would do things.
Yeah, shame it took him that many years to figure it out. He had to die in the process, but it's good to know he learned.
Although they pointed out he had to build a Phantom Zone projector from memory. Which Superman confirmed fucking super genius. Like, oh, I just remembered how to build it.
Well, I wondered, was there, I didn't read New 52, was there a Phantom Zone generator before?
Yeah, that's how he, the Phantom Zone criminals, Zod and the other ones, that's how he got them.
No, I'm talking about in the New 52 continuity.
That I don't know, he said there wasn't.
Oh, okay. Alright, let's move on to our next title, Blue Beetle Rebirth number 1, writer Keith Giffen, art by Scott Collins.
Okay, so this...
Not enough Ted Kord, that's my review real quick.
Sorry, something funny. Well, this was, I liked how they set this up. So what they did was, you have Jaime Reyes, who's the Blue Beetle, but he doesn't want to be the Blue Beetle. Like, it's not that he doesn't think it's cool, it's just, you know, like, he had to miss school and stuff, he's not comfortable with this. Also, he's got the Blue Beetle scarab thing on his back, and so he doesn't want to be Blue Beetle. And apparently Ted Kord told him, like, hey, if you come with me, like, I'm a super genius, I'll help you get it off your back. Ted Kord has shown he has no interest. And he just wants to help him do superhero stuff. He doesn't really want to get it off his back. So Blue Beetle ends up fighting a couple supervillains in this. Meanwhile, Ted Kord is visited by Dr. Fate, who tells him, like, hey, you think this is like an alien thing and you can use it for good, but it's not an alien thing. It's a magic thing and it's not good. And we got some hints of that because while he's fighting these villains, like at one point because the suit can do various things. And at one point, like his hand turns into a giant gun and blows the roof off the building.
Nice.
Which didn't really help him.
Well, I think they're showing he still doesn't have a firm grip on the scarab.
Well, yeah, but Dr. Fate told him the scarab isn't good news.
By the way, that's another thing I have a problem with. I know you haven't read New 52 Dr. Fate, but right now it's a kid with a helmet, and they've been teasing stuff with him in the original Dr. Fate, but there was absolutely no explanation why original Dr. Fate just shows up.
Well, is the kid short? Or does he look like Dr. Fate when he gets big?
No, he still looks short. He's still wearing like a hoodie, but he's just wearing the helmet. So he just looks like a kid wearing the Dr. Fate helmet.
Okay, well, it's weird continuity glitch there, but I don't read the book, so I don't know. I do know that when you have the Dr. Fate helmet, like, you're supposed to learn what the previous doctors knew.
Mm-hmm.
So, but I don't know why he was tall and shit.
Yeah, they didn't explain that, and they explained why Ted Kord just was cool with him, if this is supposed to be a new continuity.
Well, he apparently just knew who Dr. Fate was.
But that's weird, because it's OG Dr. Fate in this universe.
They haven't explained who Ted Kord was. Like, everything they've led us to believe is he's pretty much like old Ted Kord.
Mm-hmm.
Like, he even has the beetle, like the flying Blue Beetle.
Mm-hmm.
Excuse me.
Bless you.
But he doesn't... They didn't explain why he wasn't around at the start, which might have just been a change when they did Rebirth. They just brought him back.
It could be just all the Rebirth stuff with the original Ted Kord being there and suddenly the original Dr. Fate showing up. So I'm not sure, but as someone who, I would say regularly reads, but who's been reading the last couple of issues of the Dr. Fate book, I don't understand why OG Dr. Fate showed up.
Because he looks cooler.
That's true, when he's more over.
Yeah.
Sorry. Sorry, no hugger.
Does he like the young Dr. Fate?
Yes, very much so.
Pedo.
What's that?
Nothing.
Did you call him a pedo?
Maybe. Next bug? I was joking.
What'd you say, next book?
Yeah, next bug.
Deathstroke issue 1, writer Christopher Priest, art by Carlo Purien.
I found this hard to follow.
Yeah, okay, I'm not the only one that had a problem with this. Okay,
there,
good.
Okay, because there were flashbacks in it. Like, they showed... They were trying to show this guy he rescued, who was, like, Deathstroke's partner from way back. They worked for, I don't know, mercenary group. And so was Deathstroke's wife. And they were getting in a fight. She was upset that he gets to go on all the missions, but ever since she had kids... She's basically just a nanny now, like she stays home with the kids.
Uh-huh.
So the dude comes in to talk to him, and Deathstroke's got a mission, and she's like demanding to go on, and they decide to get divorced during all this. So that happened, and then he ends up killing the Clock King, but the other guy suggested Deathstroke was technically doing good, because by killing him, and the senator they were trying to corrupt getting killed, what he did was he still made all the money. That still happened. But he also saved, like, thousands and thousands of lives, because there'd be no civil war now in this country. So they were trying to hint that maybe he's not such a bad guy, mm-hmm. but everything they show about him is he's such a bad guy. So I'm not really sure where they're going with that. By the way, I just wanted to drop this because I'll talk about it later. But yeah, I mean, the issue was fine. It was just they jumped back and forth so much, which I think was to tell you who this other character was. And they're like piecemeal giving you a little more of Slade's background. Which is good, because, you know,
gives you something to come back for, right?
Huh?
Gives you something to come back for, right?
Yeah, and as far as I understand, he already had a book in the New 52, so maybe they've changed stuff about him, and they set up the new status quo.
In fact, funny you bring that up, because we try to read it when they reintroduce the character.
Yeah, and I didn't like it. So I like this more than that, and I do want to see where they go, but, you know. We this storyline is kind of done, but his past storyline, they've only just started to get into. His kid's going to be a villain eventually for him.
It's funny, in the Rebirth issue, they showed how much of a dick he was as a father, but in this one, they kind of showed the lighter side of him as a father as well.
Yeah, he was still kind of a dick, though, because he was just, like, his kids are there, and one of his kids ran away, and the mom's just like, hey, he runs away every 2 weeks, whatever. They didn't give a shit. They just wanted to go on a mission and kill people.
Yeah, that's true. Like, but at the same time, they want to humanize the character, but at the same time, they don't want to make him like 100% babyface.
When he was a kid, when they were young kids, he was a dick to him, but he was a dick to him to like try to toughen him up.
Yeah.
Now that they're adults, I mean, he probably thinks it's kind of late for that. So he just doesn't give a shit about him.
Mm-hmm.
So still not a good guy. Not a good guy, not a bad guy. He's just
a guy.
The Deathstroke.
I was just say a guy.
Yeah, he's just a guy. He's more of a bad guy, though.
That's true. All right, next book, Flash issue 5, writer Joshua Williamson, art by Neil Gu.
Okay, so this issue confused me, and then they explained it. They thought the crazy whirlwind doctor from the last issue was Godspeed.
Nope.
And I never even considered that would be the case. So I didn't know why they did. So... When Godspeed turns up and he killed the new Chick Flash and he killed a bunch of the other Flashes.
I'm shocked he didn't put her in the refrigerator.
He had to steal their speed.
Yeah, that's
so he did. And, Flash is running around and he's going to be pissed because he was dating that girl.
That's funny. How many years has it been since that Green Lantern storyline?
It was immediately after Emerald Twilight.
But it's been, okay, let's just guesstimate and say 20 years, right? And they're probably still doing the same gimmick of let's introduce a woman and then immediately kill her just to have an effect.
Well, they didn't stuff her in a fridge.
They might
so
as
that
well.
Was okay. And in all honesty, this character got 4 issues of development as opposed to Kyle's girlfriend. I think her name was Alex, mm-hmm. which was probably Alexandria or something, but it was Alex. You briefly met her, and then the next you met her, she was cut up in a fridge. So it's not quite the same.
They've learned by having a few more issues of establishing the character. 20 years.
Yeah. Well, because then you care more. Like, honestly, when she got stuffed in a fridge, I didn't give a shit. Mm-hmm. I'm like, whatever, his girlfriend died. So in this, I thought, oh, I didn't expect them to kill this character. So it works better.
Yeah. It seems like we're going through these books awfully fast, and I feel like it's not going to get better when we go into our next book.
Well, there's not a lot to say.
Yeah, especially with the next book. Hal Jordan, The Green Lantern's Corps, Issue 3, Robert Venditti, arc by Rafael Sandoval. I feel like this could be summed up in three parts.
He beat the shit out of the Yellow Lanterns.
Uh-huh.
And then... Okay. So the Yellow Lanterns are powered by fear.
Yes.
And Sinestro sent out all the Yellow Lanterns to bring fear to the universe. So since there is more fear being produced, they are getting stronger. So Hal was fighting, I think he said 12 of them at once and having no problems beating the shit out of them.
Exactly.
But then one of them he's fighting is talking shit. And he's telling them like, hey, this is going on all over the place. You can't even match us. And his ring's saying like power 100%, power 110%. It eventually gets up to like 200%. And then the last page of the issue is Hal Jordan all fucking laid out like he got the shit kicked out of him.
Yeah,
because there were
the whole
you know,
book
20
was
Yellow Lanterns.
The whole point of the book was A, showing you how dominant the Yellow Lanterns are as far as in the idea that they're dominating the universe. They show Sinestro being a boss to all the galaxy's top wigs.
Well, no, what he did there was like an evil religious cult,
mm-hmm.
apparently, but Sinestro is working with them. Whereas the Green Lanterns had shut them down and made them illegal.
And then the final part of this book was Hal Jordan, like you said previously, where he's fighting the Yellow Lanterns and then he loses.
Yeah, Guy Gardner was kind of beaten up a little bit too, but it's Guy Gardner, so we like to see him get
hey!
Beat up. And they couldn't find him. The other Green Lanterns on Mogu,
mm-hmm.
they couldn't find Guy and they were worried he was dead.
As they should be.
So that was good. But this is this one, it makes sense. And it was short. It was a very fast-moving issue with a lot of fighting. The fighting looked cool. He made some cool stuff with his ring. I'm happy to see how Jordan has not gone back to boxing gloves.
Give it time.
Well, they're building to him fighting Sinestro and then reestablishing the Green Lantern Corps. I mean, the one big strength of this book is they have multiple long storylines they're doing concurrently.
Yeah, but when you do that, the main storyline that you're trying to get over doesn't progress very far.
Well, no, it is, though, because they're showing, like, from the start of this, the Yellow Lanterns were a force for good, and in the very first issue, they turned into a force for evil. They reintroduced the Green Lantern Corps, who are back now. They showed how Hal Jordan is a Green Lantern again, and they immediately started fighting, and in this issue, they've shown what the Yellow Lanterns are capable of. So, I mean, the story is moving. I don't think not moving is a problem with this.
I don't think it's so much all the storylines that they're doing. I think it's just this was an action-heavy book with Hal fighting the Yellow Lanterns. I felt like that was half of this book.
But he did lose at the end, so it was something different. Like, he wasn't victorious. He actually just got beat, which is what you do. The babyface loses the first match, and then he comes back, and he defeats the heel.
To show that it's hard to do, that when he finally does it, it's a big accomplishment.
Yeah, except he's not going to be able to do it by himself because there's too many of them.
That's fine. There's nothing wrong with a fair fight.
Yeah.
Next book, Hellblazer Issue 1, writer Simon Oliver, art by Moriat. No last name, just Moriat.
This was confusing too. A little bit, but I think by the end they kind of squared it away. Sort of.
A little bit.
They also kind of just, like, they started a story, and once you start to understand it, they're just like, oh, well, that's resolved. We're going to move on.
Let's just wave that away.
The basics of it are, John, he got rid of the curse, so he's back in London. And Swamp Thing came to see him, because he owed Swamp Thing a favor.
So is this a sexual thing?
Yeah. Well, because there was an old storyline where Swamp Thing needed to have sex with Abby, but since he's a plant, he couldn't, so...
Wait, can I know more about this storyline?
It's in the Alan Moore run, dude, and it's incredible.
Why did
go look up the trade. I think it's called Life and Death. It's an amazing... It's not the whole run, but it's a really good, like, six-issue trade telling an awesome Swamp Thing story that you don't have to know anything to read.
Oh, there you go. I'll be sure to check that out.
But just look up Alan Moore's Swamp Thing. It's worth a read. Yeah, but anyway.
I've heard that many a time from folks.
Because
so.
John Constantine was created to be a Swamp Thing character. That was his first appearance.
Okay.
If you're unaware. So the characters have always been tied together. They also said Swamp Thing. The reason he came to John was he can't find Abby anywhere. And she is in the Rot, which I did not read all of Jeff Lemire's Swamp Thing run. Or no, he did Animal Man.
Yeah, you're in.
But it was tied in. They did a crossover.
Yeah, the red with the green.
Because Animal Man is connected to the red. Swamp Thing is connected to the green. And then there's something else called the Rot. So these books were connected. But anyway, she's supposed to be in the Rot, but he couldn't find her there. And he couldn't find her in the green. So he doesn't know where she is. So he came to Constantine, who pointed out, not to him, but to us, if he couldn't fucking find her, I don't know where the fuck she is. So he took her to a magic chick he knows and just kind of left Swamp Thing with her. And then him and Chaz booked it. But Chaz was talking to him. He's like, hey man, there's something off about you. And he's like, and you didn't talk about what happened in New York. And he's like, yeah, it's 'cause nothing happened in New York. And then the issue kind of ends.
Yeah, it was awkward.
Yeah, it was weird. It was like a weird stopping point. Now, this wasn't a bad issue, and they have the character right. They even had one line about, you know, oh, that time in New York, it didn't even feel like I was really me. And that was, I think what that was doing was it was kind of poking fun at the fact that Constantine had been a bigger part of the DC universe total, the superheroes and shit.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas in this, he's very much separate the way he used to be.
Although, and I think the fact they had Swamp Thing in there was sort of a bit of a reminder.
Now, because Swamp Thing also isn't, you know, firmly tied into the normal DC universe.
Okay.
Those two characters, like, Constantine had a couple of the DC universe characters involved, but they weren't main ones. Like, he had Swamp Thing. He occasionally interacted with Phantom Stranger. I don't think he ever did a lot with, he didn't even ever do a lot with Dr. Fate. Because Dr. Fate, while he's magic, he's more of a superhero.
Mm-hmm.
So those two weren't even tied together. Like, they wanted you to know that he was in the same universe, but he didn't run in the same circles. And he even said, you know, originally the reason he owed Swamp Thing a favor was because Swamp Thing talked to the Justice League for him. And he couldn't remember what they were called. But Swamp Thing talked to the Justice League for him and, like, told him, yeah, John's okay, I vouch for him.
Nice. That was pretty much this week's Hellblazer.
Yeah, no, I mean, I liked it.
I thought it was okay, but like you said, it when you're confused on some of these books, that says a lot. Considering more often than not, a lot of these books, more often than not, I'll be confused. I won't understand exactly what's happening. So the fact that you were just kind of in the same ballpark kind of confirmed. It's like, well, okay, this wasn't just me then. All right, let's move on to our next book. Six-Pack and Dog Welder, Hand Traveling Heroes, with a Z, Issue 1, writer Garth Ennis, art by Russell Braun. This book is so great.
This is good. So,
we'd be remiss if we did our review without mentioning the beginning of this book.
What was the beginning?
Oh, God, let me go into... Was it
when Dog Welder was hanging out outside his family's house?
Yes, this family... His dad buys the kids these expensive shoes, and the mother questions, oh, you really shouldn't be spoiling them that much. But he's like, oh, they've been through a lot. And he's like, you know what I really want to do? I want to buy them a puppy. And the mom just flips out. She's like, no, never, ever buy them a dog. You're a sweetheart, but for the love of God, never buy them a dog. And it's then that they cut to the kids, and they have these grooves on their face.
Like burns.
Yeah.
On one side of their face. Well, meanwhile, Dog Welder is standing outside watching all this, and he gets really sad when he finds out because of him, his kids can't have a puppy. So
I wonder why.
So he's sad, and he walks off, and then we cut to Six Pack, who's talking to somebody about how he's like a jobber super team. Meanwhile, Guts, who in the previous issue, Bueno Excelente had married. He was cheating on her with a compost heap. And Power Girl,
Catwoman.
Catwoman.
Starfire.
And
Starfire.
Starfire, who I didn't get the joke on that, she just kept talking about outer space.
Isn't that her gimmick, that she's kind of loopy?
No, she's from outer space, but, well, she wasn't when I read her, but I don't know, maybe they changed it. But, yeah, so they're talking to her about how this isn't right, which is funny because she's like an internal organ monster. But they're talking to her about how he treats her like shit, and she needs to set boundaries and let him know that this isn't okay. And meanwhile, Six-Pack's like, we're just as good as the Justice League or whatever. It's just people don't know about it. What we need to do is save the world. So he gets the team together and explains this to him. And then we cut back to Dog Welder, who apparently was in the alley outside talking to John Constantine. I mean, that was the indication. The guy was, they didn't show him, but the guy was talking to him, and he's talking like John Constantine, and they showed the silk cuts. So, and they showed part of a trench coat. So you figure it's John Constantine, but he's telling him like, hey, you might not need to do all this welding. Like, have you ever thought, because Dog Welder can't talk.
No.
And he suggested that he could teach him how to speak through the dogs.
Makes sense.
So, but then they cut away and there's a big green thing in the sky, and Power Girl and company, they're like, nah, we need a night off. We're not going to deal with this. But Six-Pack's like, oh, we can fucking take care of it. So they go up, and then it turns out it's the Spectre. And the Spectre says he needs to give justice to one of them. And then the issue ends, and the spoiler is, who is he talking about? Is he talking about Dog Welder? Is he talking about Six-Pack? Is he talking about Bueno? Is he talking about Bader?
Could be. If I had to guess, it'd be Bueno.
Well, Bader is a demon.
Yeah, but what has Bader done, though?
Been a bartender.
Yeah. He ain't caused no problems.
By the way, as a side note, since they actually referred to something the last time they saved the world, they said See Hitman, Volume 7. I just remembered Grant Morrison and Garth Ennis are friends. And in Morrison's Justice League, the comic that famously got me into reading comics.
Ooh, nice.
They, after about 8 issues, they did a recruitment drive. And one of the heroes who interviewed was Hitman, because it's Garth Ennis' character, he's friends with him, and Hitman sits down and he goes, I have X-ray vision and I kill people for money. And then they show him walking away, and it was Green Arrow, and he's like, why did you possibly think they would accept you onto the Justice League? And he goes, I just wanted to come up here to use my X-ray vision on Wonder Woman.
Ooh, nice.
And then he left. It is good. Hitman was such a great series. No, but this is really funny, and I'm looking forward to the next thing.
Yes, I'm. As am I. I don't know why. See, I was skeptical, because I remember Six-Pack, All-Star Section 8. I read parts of it, and I thought it was okay, but this out the gate, I'm like, I'm 100% hooked.
So I guess they're going to be, like, running from the Spectre, maybe?
I think they're going to go in a completely different direction.
Yeah, I don't know what they're going to do. It was called Hard Traveling Hero, so I assumed it. I mean, they pitched it as a road trip book.
Ooh, nice.
Which it's not yet. But, yeah, so this was good. This was funny. This read like a Garth Ennis comedy book. Yeah. Which is, by the way, Garth Ennis is doing a, he's doing a 5-issue mini based on World of Tanks, the tank MMO. And I read the write-up for it, and it just sounds like a 5-issue part of War Stories.
Aww. That's all it is. I was hoping they played it up for laughs.
No, the guy fucking loves war, and he's like, oh, I'll write this.
I'm a little disappointed with that news.
We're not going to read it, because I already read War Stories.
Yeah, but that's a little bit better, and that's consistent. It's still good stories, but I'd rather...
One of my favorite War Story storylines was the Israeli one with the tanks.
Oh, that one was fun.
Yeah, I really like that one, but, you know, whatever. I just thought I'd mention that.
Okay, let's move into...
So that was Six-Pack and Dog One.
Yes, let's move into a book with completely different creative. Titans Issue 2, writer Dan Abnett, art by Brett Booth.
Kadabra made... he made the Teen Titans versions of the characters.
Okay, this is so confusing, because for those of you who don't know, there is a Teen Titans running around in the DC continuity right now. So not only do we have that one to contend with, but was it Abracadabra, right?
Yeah.
He brought back the original iterations of the Titans right now, the ones that focus in this book, but he brought
when
back
they
the
original Teen Titans.
Exactly. So for example, for example, I think it was Nightwing was Robin. So he brought up another team of Teen Titans, but it was the same ones that they used to be.
Yeah, it was Nightwing was Robin, Arsenal was Speedy, Tempest was Aqualad. It was all the, but they weren't younger. They were like grown up versions of their kid. Like, Wally was Kid Flash, and I think he's just Flash now. He's just another Flash.
Yeah, he's another Flash, yeah.
Yeah, so, but they fought him, and, they found out it was Kadabra. Cause they said like, oh, it's Kadabra, but Wally hadn't been told at this point. Because Wally would know who he was, cause he remembers, cause he's only been brought in since Rebirth. He wasn't used as a character before this. Mm-hmm. That was the gimmick. They were hinting that he was behind it all, which is bullshit. Kadabra's gimmick was he does magic, but he's not really doing magic. He's a guy from the future who has really advanced technology that looks like magic to modern day. So he's not really a magician. And he doesn't want to go back to the way things were before. So Wally didn't know, but the rest of them found out because they put the lasso on old girl, and she's like, it was Kadabra. And Arsenal's like, it's someone named Kadabra. And he's up on the roof. So they went to get him. They didn't get him yet.
No.
No, it wasn't moving the meta story along, but it did move this story along.
And didn't that one girl, the one that the OG Wally was trying to talk to, wasn't she able to talk to this
Linda Park?
Yeah, wasn't she able to talk to the what's called the Kid Flash?
Yeah, because during Rebirth, Wally she was one of the, like, he appeared to Barry and then he immediately went to Linda because that was his wife, and she didn't know him. So when she saw the Kid Flash, the fake one, she's like, oh, hey, you're Wally West. You're trying to talk to me. And he's like, I don't know who you are. Yeah. And that was when Kadabra realized, he's like, oh, shit, right. In the timeline, they haven't met yet. So this is all jacked up. Now he's already breaking time. I'm talking about Flash. So I got to move up my plans, which is apparently to kill them and possibly take over the world, because that's usually what supervillain plans are.
Usually. More often than not.
Yeah, usually. Take over the world. So, yeah, this issue moved incredibly fast.
Like most of these DC books, honestly.
Yeah. Good art.
Yeah, can't complain. All right, next book, Wonder Woman, issue 5, writer Greg Rucka, art by Liam Sharp.
Okay, this is the present day one.
Yes, they're bouncing around back and forth, and from what I've heard, they have different artists depending on what story they're telling.
I haven't noticed because the art's good in every issue.
But I did some research and I heard some people talking about it, and apparently it's brought to my attention that when they go back from different storylines that they have different artists.
Well, yeah, but I'm saying the art in both is good, so
They're both good,
that.
And to be honest, I can't really tell the difference. Like, it's all done really well, but it's also done sort of that DC house style to where it all kind of looks alike.
Yeah, I haven't noticed. Yeah, I mean, this book didn't look much different from Titans, which also looked good. Mm-hmm. So they've apparently got like a string of like artists who are good, but they're not, you know, they're not all Mike Allred. Like, they don't have much of an individual style.
Yeah, that was always my criticism of DC in the past. And they've obviously since Rebirth, they've obviously in some of the books anyway, especially in the Flash book, where they'll bring in different artists and it's a different style. Which I do like, but more often than not, especially books like this, you really can't tell if there's a different style or not.
You know, I'm thinking of this now, like Deathstroke kind of looked like this book too, like all the books kind of look the same.
Yeah, and that's one thing they sort of trumpeted, I think, when they did New 52. They were going to have a bunch of artists, but they were all going to draw sort of in the same style, which I guess, I mean, it's different than Marvel because Marvel has all the different artists and no two books for the most part look exactly alike, which I like.
I'll tell you right now, though, comic fans, there is a large group of comic fans who want every fucking book to look the same.
Oh, I know. I know. We know Nuthugger, and we hate it when they have different artists, and that's one of the things that trumpets of DC.
Well, because it leads up to, like, they think it makes it more consistent. Like, you don't want to see a character in three books look three different ways. So, I don't actually have a problem with that. I don't need every book to look you know, individual. I'm more concerned with the writing. So, that's fine. But what fucking book were we talking about?
Wonder Woman, homie.
All right. So, they've got Trevor's team, and they pull the picture of Wonder Woman out of his pocket, and he's like, oh, what does she mean to you? Because there's the evil warlord and then the evil god creature who's there, and he's like, oh, well, put the other ones, they're going to be sacrificed, but you are going to be the body he takes over to come back. And this guy's bad news, so that's bad. Well, Wonder Woman's coming to find him because she's got to save Steve Trevor. They were talking to a character in the beginning of this who I don't know, but she apparently has never appeared in the New 52 before. The chick with the red eye.
I don't remember this girl.
Well, she was in the first part of the book, and she was talking about how, you know, if Trevor's there, then Wonder Woman will find him because they're connected somehow.
That's true. I remember that part.
Yeah, so that character, though, is a pre-New 52 character who this is her first appearance. I did not read Wonder Woman ever. So I'm not familiar with her, but I just thought I'd mention that. So Wonder Woman's going to get him. They're going to sacrifice him. She goes in. She knows all the dudes on his team. She's like, hey guys, what's up? And then where's Steve? And Steve's all strapped down with the fucking, the blood of the god put on his chest, and he's going to be used to be his body, I guess. And then they were like, next issue. She gets to Man's World. And it's like, oh yeah, I forgot. We have to fucking do two storylines and completely stop dead the plot moving forward.
I think they're probably doing that for a reason. Because I think it's going to tie in together. But then also, is this book, I forget, is this book monthly or is it bi-monthly?
It's bi-monthly, so from their perspective, it's probably like, okay, well, this is like having two monthly books.
Exactly.
Because you have to wait a month to get the next part of the story. You're just reading two Wonder Woman books and you don't even realize it. I'm sort of amazed DC is doing this and not doing two titles. Because this is not like a comic company to fucking milk money out of everything.
To be fair, I hate to speak ill of a Wonder Woman, but I don't know if there's enough of a market to support two Wonder Woman books.
I don't think there is either, but I think this book happens to be good. So.
Yeah, I'm actually reading the description of this book. It's Wonder Woman issue 5, The Lies, quote unquote, part 3.
Yeah, and the other one's called, is it just called Year 1?
I don't know. I'm just looking at the description of part 5. But I have to imagine it's either going to be part 2 or part 3 next week. Or next time we get this book, it's probably going to be part 3. So it is all that they're doing that, but it's interesting, but it's a way to write two different Wonder Woman books while still keeping the same title.
Right. Which is fine.
Yeah. Okay. That's going to do it for the DC portion of the show, but we're not going to go too far with the Vertigo titles, with the first being Clean Room 11, writer Gail Simone, art by John Davis Hunt.
The chick who was with Astrid got word that her brother said, I don't remember. He said something that was important, but this called Astrid out of her self-imposed exile. She was going to go back now. But the evil Texan who, by the way, Astrid almost got murdered by, we saw the guys who were like following evil Texan who's trying to take over her cult thing.
Mm-hmm.
Since she's dead. He had threatened the wife of a guy who worked for him and said, hey, you gotta go kill, Astrid there or I'll kill your wife. So he went to kill her, but her Asian bodyguard was able to dispatch him. And she's like, who do you work for? And he tells her, and then she's like, all right, call him and tell him you killed me. So that was her move. Before this, Chloe went in to see, what's her name, Killian?
Mm-hmm.
Astrid's main bodyguard, who's sort of running things now. And she shows up and she's like, okay, listen, I can see the monsters like she can, but I can also see ghosts. And
oh, jeez.
My dead boyfriend has been warning me.
Oh, that's right, yeah. Something about the clean room, right?
Yeah, he's just saying the clean room, whatever's going on in the clean room is bad news. And she determined this means, what's his name, Spark? Is that what they call him?
The kid good, that's being possessed
the good
right
monster.
Now. Oh, yeah, the one they're talking to. Yeah, it's Spark.
Yeah, Spark. So he's just like, we gotta go save Spark. He's gonna die soon. Your guys are gonna kill him. So she goes in, and they tell the guys to leave, but then one of the guy we saw in the last issue, the dude who was with his boyfriend and they killed him, that was evil Texan guy organized this. He told him he'd fuck everything up if he didn't do what he told him. So he kills one of those guys and then he's gonna kill them. He ends up shooting Spark through the chest and he's gonna blow up the clean room with a grenade. Killian tries to fight him off. She can't, but Chloe's like, hey, Spark, you remember how they got all the evil out of you and everything? And he's like, yeah, I'm good now. And she's like, okay, I need you to let the darkness back in. So he does. He cuts the guy's fucking hand off, making him drop the grenade before he pulled the pin in his gun. And then she's like, okay, Spark, go back to normal now. And he's like, no, I don't want to. And the issue ends. Before that, though, the Texas guy had told the board of directors that Astrid was dead. Now, obviously where this is going is Astrid's going to make her big appearance, and it'll look like she came back from the dead. So she's going to have even stronger hold over her followers because now she's female Jesus.
Nice.
That's what they're doing. She didn't plan this, but that's the way it is. So... yeah, so that's what's going on. This book is still good. This book, I think, is always going to be good.
Yep, I'm just confused now with all the characters in the clean room now. Because it's like, I don't know if it's Istrid or it's one of the other characters from the clean room organization confused. I'm like, wait.
Astrid is the only redhead.
I remember the redhead, and then who's the blonde?
That's Killian. That's her, like, head of security number two person.
I guess when I don't see them together at the same time, I get them confused. Because they have very similar...
Okay, because they look completely different.
But they have very similar personalities.
Sort of. Killian's not 100% on board with her, though. And also, she looks like she's 7 foot tall and blonde with short hair. And Astrid is shorter and has red hair, and it's long. Mm-hmm. And she's usually not carrying a gun, whereas this chick is almost always carrying a gun and fights.
I know, but when you have those two and then you have Chloe, obviously Chloe, I could tell the difference, but she looks nothing alike.
Chloe's black.
Yeah. So. That I admit is like I could tell the difference. And she's sort of, I guess, from our point of view, the character who we're kind of experiencing the story through. So that is not that hard to differentiate the two. Yeah, but
guys, I'm going to explain this right now. Tony's Mexican, and he's being racist right now, saying he can't tell white people apart, even though one of them's blonde and one of them's a redhead. Come on, dude. Stop being racist.
Hey, I can get away with it. It's white people.
Oh, goddamn. It's not fair.
All right, let's move on to our second Vertigo title, Lucifer, Issue 9, writer Holly Black, art by Lee Garbett.
So Lucifer has gone down to hell, and hell is preparing for the single combat for who controls hell.
Why is it always done through single combat? Just for once, I want a something based on wit, something based on knowledge, I don't know.
Well, they had that in Sandman. Mm-hmm. The first Sandman storyline, he went to hell to get his helmet back, and the demon who had it, they had to compete in some weird game where they could turn into anything they want. It was like a storytelling game. And like Sandman would turn into like a fly. And then this thing would turn into a frog. And he'd say, I eat the fly. So then he turned into a crocodile. And he'd say, I'd eat the frog or whatever. And they just kept going and going and going until one of them won. It was a really cool concept. But they've done that before. But in this, it was single combat. So... Mazakine's getting ready to fight him, but they didn't want the fight to be fair, so these two little demons dulled her sword all up, and she didn't notice. Mm-hmm. And she goes out to fight him. Lucifer's in the audience, though. So she can't hurt the kid, because he said, nothing made in hell can hurt me. So she can't even hurt him with her sword, whether or not it's dulled. But then he notices Lucifer. And that makes him go all Tetsuo and fucking get
Tetsuo?
All...
Tetsuo?
Well, I mean, that's what I thought of. And he, you know, he goes all bio-monster thing and goes after Lucifer and grabs at him. And then we cut to heaven where the angels were all freaking out about this. You know, they look through God's throne and they see the fucking, the weird egg monster thing.
Mm-hmm.
So they go into it, inspect it, and at that moment it like hatches, and it's basically like, ah, I'm the new God and I'm evil and scary. He doesn't say that. He says something more threatening, but I mean, you know.
That's the gist of like it.
Yeah, it looked like the cover of a heavy metal album.
Nice.
That's what it looked like. It was pretty cool. So, yeah, Lucifer's stuck down there, but he's Lucifer, so he ain't gonna lose.
Probably not.
Because he games the shit.
It's also his namesake in the book, so we can't imagine.
Yeah, yeah, he's not gonna die. But there is a evil, evil god now, which I don't know if the angels are gonna be cool with following him.
Probably not.
Because he's not really God, clearly. God in the old Lucifer book was kind of a fat guy in a bowler cap.
That sounds
and
awesome.
And he walked with a cane.
Yeah, that sounds legit.
No, it was good. That was a great run. This is good too, though. But, I mean, that's what happened in this issue. They had the fight. The fight got stopped prematurely. He went after Lucifer. Lucifer's apparently going to beat shit out of him. They gave some backstory on why the Japanese underworld queen doesn't like him because she killed his kids, or he killed his kids.
Yeah, I almost all but forgot about that story until they brought it up in this month's issue.
Well, it's important because she's the mother of his son.
Yeah, but it's also cool because I just thought that was sort of a one-off story, but just I should have known better. It's comic books. They don't usually tell stories like that out of context unless it plays into the bigger narrative.
Oh, yeah. You're right.
Yep. All right, that's going to do it for the Vertigo section of the show. Let's move on to the Marvel section with this week's Captain America, Steve Rogers, number 4, writer Nick Spencer, art by Javier Pena.
He talked to the doctor and told him, they have to kill Red Skull. That was the big thing at the end. Not because he's broken free of the mind control, but because apparently the mind control didn't quite work.
I got the impression it worked. The mind control worked too well. He was trying to do what's best for Hydra and what would be the best thing for Hydra going forward. And really, Red Skull's making so much about it himself. He's like, well, you know, I'm so committed to the cause and I'm so committed to Hydra. I want to see Hydra, you know, see a brand new day, but we can't do it without killing the Red Skull.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, which, just great, by the way.
It's kind of a big problem. He's still mind controlled, but yeah, he's so dedicated to Hydra, he has to kill Red Skull, who is the biggest threat to Hydra.
Even when he's evil and he kills people, he still hates the Red Skull.
It's not that he hates Red Skull. It's just that he doesn't believe Hydra is evil. He believes Hydra is evil because of what Red Skull has done to it, because they keep showing these flashbacks, the fake flashbacks she's given him. And I guess to jibe with his mind, he had to be raised thinking Hydra is this force for good. So by doing that, he would automatically think that the evil racist Red Skull is not a force for good. So he's corrupting Hydra, and he needs to remove him so that he can bring Hydra back to glory. It's a great storyline. Because Steve is still kind of a bad guy, but not really.
Well, he's still killing folks, and that's something he never really done before in this...
No, he killed people in Brubaker's run.
Oh, okay. Well, but he's killing innocent people. He threw that one superhero kid out of the plane, and he's in a coma, so...
Yeah, but he's not dead.
So putting someone in a coma, that's not bad as long as they don't die, right?
Yeah.
Jesus.
Dude, if it was Punisher, he would have just fucking shot him in the head.
That doesn't mean he's not a good guy.
Well, he's not a good guy. He's not a bad guy. He's the guy.
There's a lot of guys in Marvel. I don't think Captain America's the guy.
Well.
You can make an argument for that, but...
Yeah, but... No, I mean, you know... They showed the flashback some more when his mom got fucking murdered by Hydra.
That part was horrible, because obviously she wanted to stop going to the meeting because she started to think something was up.
Well, because she thought they killed her husband, so she's afraid of him, and they came to her house to see her and came in and shit, and she told Steve to hide. And
although if you're afraid of an evil organization killing your husband, wouldn't you want to not tip them off? Wouldn't you just want to keep going to the meeting so they wouldn't be suspicious?
Probably, but she was planning on leaving that night. I would imagine her thinking was, well, if they're all at the meeting, then I can get out right now because they're all busy. Could have been that, but I don't know how often these meetings were. But she told Steve to hide, but the lady came in with the red scarf and she saw the suitcase and realized what she was doing and revealed what she really wanted was Steve because she had big plans for him. So she apparently killed the mom when she found out she was going to leave after the mom suggested that they killed the dad, which they admitted to, you know, but like, oh, but he beat you and stuff. But she still wasn't cool with them killing him.
You know what? I was gonna argue with you back and forth, but then I thought about how they brainwashed Cap, and it sort of makes sense. Because Korpik is the one that brainwashed Steve, right?
Yeah.
And the way the Red Skull's sort of been portraying Hydra is that they're this peace force, and they're trying to do away with the evil superheroes.
Yeah, he sold it to her that way, so when she does her mojo on Cap, it's going to be the way she was told, not exactly the way Red Skull wanted it. Because Red Skull had assumed if he's loyal to Hydra, he'd be loyal to the leader of Hydra, which is me. Red Skull didn't think this through.
No, he did not.
Yeah.
Oh, well. All right, so move on to our next book, Extraordinary X-Men 13, writer Jeff Lemire, art by Humberto Ramos. Finally, the albatross that is the Apocalypse storyline has now been done away with.
Sort of.
Yeah, I know. There's still some after effects of that.
I like this more because they've got two different storylines. The first one is Magic and Storm are going to look for the new mutant girl who the one who can, like, talk to the demons and stuff. Mm-hmm. And they had a cute bit where they're in limbo and they showed her demon pet and it was all sad. Just standing by the portal she took out. Well, Magic is very interested in finding her because she was told that she is evil and will end the world. So, obviously, that makes her want to find her. You gotta train her right, make sure she doesn't end the world. So, Storm says she has to go with her because we don't do this alone. And as she's traveling through various dimensions, she found one of her portals and went through it. But she keeps going through the portals to try to get where she is. She's trying to get an energy reading. Mm-hmm. And she stops at a place that has a particular energy reading. And she ends up getting in a fight with some guys who I am not familiar with at all.
No.
But I'm assuming they're pre-existing characters. And they're not like the big villains, they're just villains for them to fight from an alternate universe. I can't add anything to that.
Isn't there also the subplot that they're trying to bring back Colossus who got left in the future?
Yes, I was getting to that.
Sorry about that.
Thank you. Nightcrawler and Iceman are running around the world trying to... They're trying to get information from the Apocalypse cultists,
mm-hmm.
but Nightcrawler is really pissed about this whole thing, so he's being, like, super violent and almost killed some dudes who knew jack shit. Like, they told them, like, we don't know anything. All the real cultists left. We're just pledges. And he was going to kill them, so Iceman had to calm him down.
It's weird that Nightcrawler, of all people, is acting out of character.
Well, he's gay now.
What's that?
He's gay now, so they had to change his character.
Is he? I don't remember. When did this happen?
That he's gay?
Yeah.
Fuck, all new X-Men or whatever? They tried to push it as a big deal, but...
Oh, no, cared. Iceman, I think you said Nightcrawler.
No, Nightcrawler's not gay.
No, I'm saying, but Nightcrawler acting out of character as of late?
Oh, he has a little bit. He only recently came back from heaven, dude. And he's pissed because they took his boy.
That's true. His bud.
Yeah, I had no problem with that. So they're running around trying to find them. Magic. In fact, this entire book is about people running around trying to find other people. That's the thrust of the book.
Which is a little redundant considering they're trying to find this new mutant. They're trying to find Colossus.
Yeah, but they're completely separate storylines. I mean, the little girl mutant thing spun out of the Apocalypse storyline, but it wasn't really tied into the Apocalypse storyline. Oh, also, Forge is a dick.
Well, to be fair, he had a really good justification for it. He's like, I'm working on so much right now. He's like, I don't have time for to babysit you right now. I need to do all the things. I need to try to find Colossus. I need to find this little mutant girl.
He's bitter because Storm told him she wouldn't fuck him anymore.
Well, that too.
For real, he's been a...
Bless you.
Excuse me, he's been a dick ever since that came out. I never liked Forge.
He's fine. Don't. He's a fine mutant in the X-Men.
She's too good for him. She was married to Black Panther, dude. She's fucking royalty. She's gonna fuck around with Forge. Forge? Oh, what's your power? Oh, I build shit. Fuck you.
To be fair, Black Panther did kick to the curve.
Well, he was doing the right thing.
You know, she's on the rebound. She first he was with Black Panther, then she hooked up with Logan.
Wolverine.
Then she was with Logan, and now she's on the rebound. She's on the way down. I guess Forge was a figure he had a chance, right?
I don't like Forge, so there's that. So yeah, this was the start of the we have to find them storyline, and meanwhile they have Apocalypse in a specially Forge designed Apocalypse can't escape thing.
I think that's a technical term.
Forge can do that. He can make anything, right?
Supposedly.
Yeah, that's his power. So they told him like, hey, make something Apocalypse can't escape from. He's like, all right.
I like that sound effect, by the way.
That's the Forge making something magic tech.
Bloop.
Not magic tech like in Final Fantasy 3, but that was magic tech. This is magic tech. It's different.
Potato, potato.
Yeah.
Nighthawk, issue 4, writer David Walker, art by Ramon Villalobos.
So, the evil cops armed the white supremacists to go fight the black looters who were looting because the cops were killing unarmed black kids.
Mm-hmm.
And Nightwing is trying to figure out what's behind all this and find, I remember what the character's called, the Redeemer. Try to find him, try to find all this shit out. He comes upon in this issue, the group of racists who are going to kill the black looters.
Mm-hmm.
So he beats the shit out of the racists because they got guns. And then to show fairness, he goes over to the kids, I don't know if they're necessarily kids. He goes over to the looters and he's like, hey, listen, you can't give them a fucking excuse. He's like, right now, if they would have killed you, they would have been justified because you were fucking looting. Now, I want to point out, he didn't say justified, he said vindicated. And what he meant was, in the media, they would have been vindicated. He wasn't saying it would be right in killing the looters.
No.
He was saying everyone would have seen it as them being right in killing the looters. So he said, you gotta watch that shit, you gotta watch what you're doing. Which is true to the character, and I was actually happy with that, that they're not Sam Wilsoning him. Then.
What are we cooking, by the way? Sorry, I may hate to break your momentum.
Oh, I'm heating up, some shit that we barbecued the other day.
Nice.
But I can't turn the microwave on when we have the air conditioners running because the fucking place I live at is 800 years old and it'll shut the power off and I don't want to climb down into the fucking basement tonight. Yeah, so he does all that, but then a cop shows up when he's got the kids and he fucking shoots Nighthawk in the back, like just straight shoots him in the back.
Bastard.
So Nighthawk goes to beat the shit out of this cop and he's like, I don't want to hurt him. I don't want to hurt him. I just want to knock him out. But the guy keeps fighting him. So he has to keep hitting him and he's like, fucking stay down, stay down. And, you know, he does another one of his flashbacks to his parents talking about how you shouldn't be like, I understand why you're angry, son, but you can't be angry all the time because it'll take over your world. We're never going to get a resolution to that story because this book's getting canceled.
Oops.
So I guess he's just always going to be an angry dude. The guy who is killing all the cops led Nightwing into a group of cops because he had to chase him. and he chased him into the group of cops. But you saw when he's pulling up, because like his girl, his I don't even know what you call her, his sidekick.
She's sort of, I don't know, is intel person? Because she's not on the field, but she is in fact helping him out on the computer.
She's like his oracle,
basically.
Yeah, so his oracle's telling him, like, hey, you shouldn't be following him this way. This ain't right. There's a bunch of cops and shit there. And as he's coming down, they show one of the, I don't know if it was like an EMT truck or what, but it's completely filled with explosives. Mm-hmm. So presumably kill him, kill.
Hello? You cut it there for a little bit.
Yeah. No, I said he probably wants to kill him and all the cops. And the good cop we saw who was trying to tie all this shit together, one of the bad cops was told to take care of him. So, you got that going on. I think they will be able to resolve this storyline.
Probably a safe bet.
But that's about it.
Yeah, it probably won't continue that much further. I think it's, this is Nighthawk issue 4, I believe. Yes, and it's running through issue 6. So we have 2 issues to wrap everything up.
Kind of getting upset with you, Marvel.
What are you going to do? Maybe people bought the book.
Fuck you people.
Hey, since we're talking all things Marvel, I know initially we weren't planning on talking about it, but I want to talk Uncanny Inhumans Annual number 1. Story that you say you were bored with.
I read 19 pages of this and never gave a shit.
I'm shocked you didn't much care for it, because I absolutely love this book. This is basically, for those of you who didn't read, I didn't want to read this book, but I thought, eh, let's give it a try anyway. After reading it, I absolutely loved it. It dealt with the story of, what was it, Dante, right? The Inhuman?
No, Grid.
Okay, Grid.
Dante was with
That's right, that's
or
right.
Inferno. His name's Inferno now.
So Grid goes back to India, goes back and sees what's going on in the situation, goes back, touches base with his family, whatever. He meets up with a family relative who tells him, hey, Grid, I want to talk to you. It's been a long time, but also I'm an Inhuman. I'm Wood. So whatever, they meet up, they catch up. He's like, hey, you have control over electricity, right? Well, it sucks being in India because, yeah, we have electricity, but... You know, the thing is where there's always these brownouts, so it's always hard to predict when to do stuff, and it's like, it sucks that the poor people always have to deal with electricity always going out, whereas the rich people never have to worry about that. So, well, let's get the government's attention. Let's have you, I guess you could stop us from having brownouts, and let's show those rich people what it's like to not have electricity. So let's mess with them. Let's have them do brownouts. And Grit's sort of like, hey, you kind of have some good ideas here, but I don't like the idea of, you know, messing with people just for the sake of, like, you're doing something very illegal to try to, you know, for a good cause. It's like, I appreciate what you have. Your heart's in the right place, but doing something like this that's kind of screwed up, I'm not cool with. So they go back and forth, and eventually the Inhumans say, he's like, what is he trying to do? This is screwed up. They briefly fight with him for a little bit, but unbeknownst to them, he doesn't know, they don't know that he's made out of wood. So when Dante fights him, he lights him on fire and immediately goes up in flames because he's made entirely out of wood. So it was kind of sad to see him die, but it's some commentary on India, but at the same time, they're Inhumans and they're there visiting and they don't want to be, you know, caught up in all the political stuff, whether you agree or not, which is, I did like this storyline in the sense that it was sort of like right down the middle. It said it's still screwed up, but at the same time, it didn't say, oh, well, this needs to be done, social outrage and stuff like that. So I like the story. It was very much, you know, shades of gray. But then at the end of the book, they show that the wood guy came back to life. I like this book. I don't know why you didn't much care for it, but I thought it was interesting. And I know we retired the book of the week segment, but if we still did, this would probably be my pick.
I would call you absolutely insane for that. But
how far did you make it?
19 pages.
At what point of the story was that at? I don't remember counting.
He just got done talking to Wood Guy, who I didn't remember who he was.
Mm-hmm. Okay. But I like that book, and I felt the need to spotlight it.
That's cool.
Okay, let's move on to the Valiant portion of the show with Faith Issue 2, writer Jody Hauser, art by Pierre Perez.
I actually really like this. I like the way they set it up, because what they were doing in the first issue was, it looked like they were trying to give Faith her own arch nemesis. And she kind of, you know, because it was this actor from the last issue who captured her, and he was gonna kill her and like videotape it so he could get over as the biggest supervillain ever. And he had kind of a cool origin story. Because he's an actor who always is in superhero movies. He always plays the superhero. So he got
sick of being typecasted, basically.
No, it wasn't that. It was when he was a kid, because his story was like he read comics since he was a kid. And he said, well, that's true. He's like, but the people I liked in the comics were, he actually said, he's like, I like Victor and Wilson and Lex. He's like the villains were the interesting characters. The heroes just reacted to what the villains did. The villains were the ones who pushed the story along.
They had plans.
Yeah, he's like, they had these great plans and they'd execute them. And he's like, I loved the villains. So I always wanted to be a villain. And it's like, oh, okay. So he was trying to make himself a villain. And, he ended up attacking her because he said, you know, oh, I bought this trap you're in online. It's a side dampener, but you can buy them anywhere now. And she broke out of it and pointed out to him, yeah, the civilian models of these, they don't actually work. They're meant to make people feel better. So.
So there's no other way to tie up psyops because for whatever reason why. And it's then that she breaks out and goes to town on him. And the part that I thought was funny was, I guess he hired a bunch of goons to take her down.
But it was his stunt doubles.
Yeah, it was a bunch of stunt doubles, but she's like, oh, this would have been so much easier had they just had guns and used bullets.
Yeah, because she beat them and she took him and
well, it's also because of her superpower. She's able to reflect stuff, but it's only to a certain degree. And she would have had a much easier time with bullets.
Yeah.
But I just thought it was that cute little face. Well, it's like, oh, why can't they just have guns?
Well, yeah, but she arrests him, and then they show the guy in jail, and another guy thanks him for doing it. And it turns out that the guy she arrested was another stunt double, and this guy is still out there, and this is all a part of his plan. And, you know, the only other thing that happened in this issue was her coworker who knows she's Faith and his girlfriend who knows she's Faith, the cosplay designer. She brought her in and said she wanted to see her costume so she could make a better, you know, because somebody wanted to do a costume of Faith, which she thought was actually pretty cool. She turned down any new costumes that she could design for
her. Isn't that why she was there to talk to her in the first place? She's like...
Well, cause she wanted to make sure she hadn't told a bunch of people.
Oh, okay.
That was her concern. She said, no, only me and my boyfriend know. So, it was all right. It was a good issue.
I totally would have marked out when they were showing the stunt doubles. There was this one who was kind of pale, out of shape, brunette, with a beard and sunglasses. That would have been great. All right, let's move on to our next book, a book that we were both big fans of, Generation Zero, Issue 1, writer Fred Vant Lenti, art by Francis Porlia.
Okay, so the important thing to note on this was what I was concerned about is it opens up and it talks about the psyops again. I thought, are we going to have another fucking book that is a spinoff of Harbinger, which we still haven't read?
Yeah, I know.
Well, I think, they're trying to put over the fact that it's like, hey, not our fault you haven't read Harbinger. By all means, go out of your way and read Harbinger.
Well, this one was not a spinoff of Harbinger, so it didn't matter.
No, but that's the one thing I kept thinking. I was like, well, I can't really blame them for pushing that Harbinger series because it was supposed to be really important and something we should have been reading, but...
It was before we read Valiant. Not our fault.
And here's another thing I've seen the solicitations for this book, and even when I first opened the book, they show you this cast of characters. And it's not a lot. Like, really, we're talking 6, 7, maybe 8 characters tops, and I was like, I was kind of worried because I'm just like, I don't know how much I care for a team book, especially when the team's going to be this book, this big. And I was like, well, I'll read it anyway because we put it on the list. But really, I like the way they're doing it. I have to imagine going forward, they're going to focus each issue going forward on each member on the team.
I don't think so, because I think first they need to get over this girl because they've given us a point of view character, like a normal character who sought out this team's help. And the way they give help is actually really interesting. They go online and they go into a, I don't know if it's IRC or what, but they go into a particular chat channel. and they, I don't know if they upload audio or a video or what, but they basically upload something of them explaining their issue and asking for Generation Zero's help. And they showed like one kid who was going to shoot up his school and a girl who was really mad about people bullying her, just a bunch of different teenage shit. But our main character, she had a problem where her boyfriend disappeared, and they said it was because he got drunk, really drunk, and he crashed his car. Mm-hmm. Well, she said that's bullshit because he was a straight edge dude, so he didn't drink or anything. So she puts all this in, and then she's going to go to a party. She lives in this weird city. They called it Redneck Dubai. It's like a really fancy city that was built up because of money. And, you know, all the people who live there are super rich and stuff. They have all the fanciest technology and all this shit. Well, since her boyfriend died, some of the popular kids, they feel bad for her now. Because they were saying like she was one of the outcasts. But as is the way with modern days, the outcasts get melded into the in crowd.
No kidding.
Because of, you know, the internet, basically. That's changed things for kids. So they all want her to be a part, and they invited her to a party basically celebrating her dead boyfriend, and they're all acting super nice to her. She goes, but she's not really comfortable. And then she walks a little bit of ways, and there's some new kids who are there. And she's talking to them, and, you know, she's not really comfortable with them. So she walks away to go to the river because her boyfriend told her he sent like a CD, like an audio CD to her before he died. Mm-hmm. Basically saying like, hey, here's what's going on. Here's what I'm doing. I gotta go to this lake. I'll see you. We'll talk about it later or whatever. Well, he obviously died, so he never got to talk to her, but he sent the thing. While she's down there, she gets attacked by like weird guys. I don't know how to describe them. They have like white masks that cover everything and suits, and they talk weird.
Mm-hmm.
Well, it turns out that those new kids are Generation Zero coming to help her. So we get that reveal at the end. Even though if you fucking pay any attention to comics, you knew that's who they were when she first met them.
Yeah, I know. But that was funny though. She's sort of oblivious to it.
Yeah, but she didn't know. Well, because nobody knows what they look like.
No, obviously.
In fact, they don't even know if they're real. It's like something kids do. They ask for their help because they only help people if they think it's justified.
Yeah, because
like,
they had a montage where they had a bunch of kids and they showed that they all had their problems. They all had these powers, but like, I guess they sort of passed. But on this girl, they decided to help her out.
I'm still kind of shocked they didn't stop the kid who was about to shoot up his school.
That is like a little messed up, yeah. Well, maybe they didn't believe him.
So yeah, it was a good first issue. We didn't get anything into any of these characters except the chick who was listed on like the roster page they did. So I don't know how that, she doesn't have powers or anything. But
it could be the thing when she's finally introduced to Generation Zero, she meets all the members of the team.
Or maybe they activate her powers.
That's
how the psyops work.
Yeah, that could be it too. But when I was reading this and I kept flipping through, I'm like, oh, they're focusing a lot on this one character. So I'm like, maybe that's the way they're going to go going forward. They're going to devote each issue to one of the members of the team.
No, I think they'll continue to follow her. She's the normal person who can react to the weird shit, which is a really common storytelling trope.
Yeah. But with that said, I'm a big fan of this book.
Yeah, it was a very strong first issue. Gave you pretty much a clear picture of what's going on. And, you know, you didn't get into the characters on the team, but you got into what they do.
Well, yeah, they want to establish her in this issue. And I get the feeling that the next couple of issues, they'll flesh them out a little bit. But yeah, this girl's supposed to be our point of view character.
Yeah. Yeah. It was very good. Another good Valiant series starting, which is good because XO Manowar is ending.
I you'll love this. A 4001 AD tie-in. Rye issue 16, writer Matt Kent, art by Safu.
This issue wrapped up a storyline that was introduced in other issues of, I think in the other issues of Rye, because Rye itself has not been running through the 4001 AD story. it's been doing a history of New Japan thing. Mm-hmm. So they went back to the past and they show when Rai encountered the previous Rai, the one with the laser whip who had a kid with, the Rai that preceded him. Mm-hmm. He was supposed to kill her, but instead he had a kid with her. And they explain more about the Rai's. They're half human, half robot, or half human, half father. And they showed a mission where the Raddies were going to, they were going to like kidnap the Rai's, the current Rai's mother. They weren't going to kill her. They were going to kidnap her, but when they unhooked her from father's shit, she died. So that was bad news. It turned out that this previous Rai had been behind it all. And like, you know, he had some fucked up shit. Like he goes, when he gets, originally gets the call, he thought it was them killing the robots, the positrons, because he walks into a barn and like they're all dead and like hanging by hooks. But the old Rai pointed out that that was all, you know, they all offered to be killed so they could distract him, so these guys could carry out their plans. Mm-hmm. So it's kind of fucked up, but you know, Rai ended up killing this guy, killing this Rai, and he didn't give a shit because he said, you know, after they killed his woman, he had nothing to live for. But he just wanted to talk to this Rai before he was too far gone. So, and I mean, we know eventually Rai went good, so.
You don't say.
Yeah. So, you know, it was a successful issue. It's just, they were just wrapping up the story of what happened to that Rai.
Yeah.
And not moving the, but I mean, 4001 AD is coming out next week, so the last issue.
How many issues of that did we get? Two?
Four.
Three? Four, okay. Because I just feel like with all the tie-ins, it's like, have we ever got a follow-up from the first issue of 4001 AD?
Yep.
Okay.
That's the one where him and Eternal Warrior and the other alien dude teamed up.
Okay.
They went up to New Japan and the robot. And
that's right. I'm sorry. With all the tie-ins, I got confused. I'm like, which book has been a tie-in and which book has been 4001 AD?
Mm-hmm.
There you go. All right. That's going to do it for this week's books. Let's move on to our final segment, next week's books. All right, let's see what we got for next week's books. I'm going to pitch it to you, and keep in mind, I'm going to read this book regardless. And I'm fine with you not reading it. But Afterlife with Archie.
Yeah, go ahead. I'm not going to read it.
I knew it. A for effort.
I didn't like the issue you had me read, so no interest in continuing
hates
to read
hates comics.
That. Hates unoriginal vampire comics because I've already read enough fucking vampire comics. Putting Archie in it isn't enough of a gimmick for me.
Zombie. Said vampire.
Whatever.
Zombie.
My number four, where according to the cover, she has electric powers and is fighting monsters.
I sincerely doubt that's what we're going to get.
No, why is Mark Waid mentioned in this?
Because he's a great writer.
Oh, no, he's putting over Gene Ha, who I don't recall him ever working with.
Maybe they're just whatever. Close. Maybe he's a fan.
And Book of the Week, Predator vs. Judge Dredd vs. Aliens, number two. The best comic ever.
Not really.
Because
it's
exactly what it says it is. Art Ops 11. Whoa, there's a lot of DC.
No.
That's it. Good fucking break.
I know. This week, half of our books were, in fact, DC books. And one of them's Vertigo, so we have one DC book.
Jupiter's Legacy, Volume 2, Number 3.
Okay.
Lazarus 24. Yay, Saga 37.
Yeah, I know it's been a while.
And will you be doing anything with Tokyo Ghost?
I'm going to read it, but I'm not going to put it on the list.
Okay, cool. All New Wolverine Annual, number one.
Nice.
Which is Wolverine, Gabby, Gwenpool, and Jonathan.
Will this be the first time you've ever read anything with Gwenpool?
Yes.
Huh.
I think.
So it's an annual, so I presume it takes...
Wait, no, I'm sorry. It's not Gwenpool. It's Spider-Gwen.
Ah, okay. Never mind. Okay.
Oh, well. And the cover is supposed to look like Reservoir Dogs. They all have sunglasses on, nice. Including Jonathan the Wolverine. That's a pretty awesome cover. Amazing Spider-Man, 17. Civil War 2, Choosing Sides, 5 of 6. That's almost over. Howard the Duck, number 10. Hyperion, number 6. Possible last issue? I don't know. Miss Marvel, number 10. Silver Surfer, number 6. Silver Surfer, issue 200. Oversized anniversary issue.
Nice!
And the cover is Silver Surfer surrounded by issues of Silver Surfer. By the way, I just remembered this. The fucking six-pack book.
Mm-hmm.
The opening scene was him looking at the fucking, the 70s issues of Green Lantern, Green Arrow.
Oh, and yeah! He's
like, I can't believe we forgot that. And he's like, we should fight racism like they did.
He saw, oh yeah, they taught that AIDS, having AIDS was okay.
Yeah, he's like, that AIDS is okay. And he's like, did you just say AIDS is okay? No, AIDS isn't okay, but having AIDS is okay. I mean, the people with it are okay. Spider-Man number 7.
This is the Miles series?
Yeah. Adjectiveless Spider-Man. Uncanny Avengers.
Because the man wouldn't let him have Amazing. Or Ultimate. No.
He's just Spider-Man. He doesn't need all that shit.
No, he's like doing the Chris Rock bit. Because the man wouldn't let him have Adjective.
Uncanny Avengers 13?
Yes. No Thunderbolts? No love for them anymore?
Did we read issue 3?
I don't remember.
I know they were referenced in a book we read. Ooh, actually... Yeah, let's read this, because yeah, it's the Thunderbolts versus the Squadron Supreme.
Another instance of us forgetting something in a book. At the end, Cap is all, oh, we need to find Korvac, and he's like, I know exactly where they're at. Or I know exactly where
she's
at.
Yeah, because she's on the team.
She's bebopping around with the Thunderbolts.
Yeah, that was
so do we want to include that, yes or no?
Yeah, let's read Thunderbolts.
Okay.
4001 AD, number 4 of 4.
Mm-hmm.
Bloodshot 16, which I probably won't like.
Bastard.
And Exo Manowar 49, which it says the march to Exo Manowar number 50.
that's usually how it works. 49 becomes before 50.
Yeah, but they want you to know because I think 50 is the last issue. So that's all the books.
That comes out to a grand total of 22 books there, Alex.
Ooh, that's a little more. That's
a little
okay.
More than usual, but
I'm not reading Tokyo Ghost, so.
I left that off the list.
Oh shit!
Yeah, it's still 22. So,
a few more books.
Did you put Choosing Sides?
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, it's still 22. All right, that's not too bad. That's part of the course of what we usually do here on Comic Conversation.
No,
all right, that's gonna do it for this week's show. So, from all of us at HalfGuard.com, thanks for checking out this week's show, and as always, see you guys next time. Adios.